This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
A Capital Affair.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Reports this morning say Bank of America needs money to make it through the fallout. A lot of it. Stress test results come out tomorrow, like they're a big secret, right? Welcome to the Morning Open, and we ask, where's Wall Street? Wall Street's up at this hour. The Dow up about 53 points, 0.6% to 84.63. NASDAQ and S&P up as well. The S&P almost by a full percent. Today, Asian markets mostly up. Hong Kong shares added 2.5%. And right now, European markets are up 1 to 2%. All right, Julie Niemann, analyst with Smith Moore & Company, joins us on the line from St. Louis live. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning.
So let's talk about this Bank of America thing, one of the biggest of the big, and this morning's Wall Street Journal and New York Times reports the bank needs $34 billion to survive this economic climate. What's at the heart of that big number?
Well, on top of that, it's $45 billion has already been taken from the government in terms of TARP money.
That's the bailout, yeah.
The bailout, right. So in back of that, the big problem you have is they spent a fortune buying Golden West, Country Slide, Merrill Lynch, none of which has worked out. Big examination of Bank of China, Construction Bank. They've got lots of assets there that simply have not been working out. And on top of that, lots of bad loans. So they need this huge infusion of cash coming from somewhere. Probably the biggest thing is, do they keep with the TARP money, or what they could do is convert the common into common, and that would save them the big dividend. But they need fresh money, and it has to come from somewhere else, and they don't want the government to become their biggest voting shareholder. So what are they going to do? They're going to sell assets in all likelihood. Sell that $8 billion stake in China, which would give them a fresh infusion. Maybe offer common stock to the public, but that would be a really tough sell because, you know, you've got a company here that's right at the edge here. Probably the biggest thing is the venture capital boys are queuing up now to try and get an inside into the banks here. These are the usual suspects, Soros, Paulson, Dell. They all want to get into the banking business.
A lot of options, Julie Niemann, and I see Bank of America shares up about 9% at this hour. We thank you.
You bet.
All right. You know, some of the nation's banks want to show their strength by paying back the federal money they got from the Troubled Asset Relief Program. As early as today, they could find out the rules for that repayment. From Washington, Tamara Keith reports.
Banks are not big fans of the restrictions on executive compensation and other government pressures that come with the TARP. Some didn't even want the money in the first place. Scott Talbot is with the Financial Services Roundtable, an industry group.
The test for returning TARP money should be the ability of the bank to demonstrate that it doesn't need it anymore.
That's what the government wants, and more. Banks would reportedly have to forego the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation's debt guarantee program. That allows banks to borrow private money at a fairly low cost.
We want to keep lending going, and the liquidity program of the FDIC helps encourage that. By asking the bank to step outside of that program, that would decrease lending, which is a bad thing for the economy right now.
Banks have borrowed more than $300 billion since last fall with the assistance of the program. In Washington, I'm Tamara Keith for Marketplace.
By the way, Sheila Bair, the head of the FDIC, told a Senate hearing this morning that the too-big-to-fail mentality must end. She proposes a so-called systemic risk council made up of the U.S. Treasury, the Federal Reserve, Securities and Exchange Commission, and the FDIC. They would monitor large institutions and their potential risks to the system. News this morning that the private sector job losses dropped in April to 491,000 versus more than 700,000 in March. That's an April number, 491,000, according to employment company ADP. You're listening to The Morning Report on Wednesday, May 6th, 2009, at marketplace.org. Congress is debating limits on interest rates and fees paid by credit card users. The bill, which could come to the Senate floor this week or next, has touched off a separate battle over the fees that credit card issuers charge merchants. Here's Marketplace's John Dimsdale.
Every time you use a credit card, the store pays a fee to the card company, and those fees add up, $48 billion last year, according to merchants. Consumer advocates like Ed Mirzvinsky at U.S. PIRG say two companies have a stranglehold on retailers.
MasterCard and Visa are so ubiquitous that if you don't take MasterCard or Visa, you will lose business, and that's the hammer that MasterCard and Visa hold over the merchant's head, and it's a very effective hammer.
But card issuers say there's no monopoly imposed on retailers. Trish Wexler is a spokeswoman for banks and credit card companies.
Most recently, there are a good deal of new entrants into the marketplace of PayPal or Revolution Money. The industry is growing and it is fiercely competitive.
Retailers, though, are asking Congress to give them more say in negotiating lower fees, which they claim would reduce prices for everybody. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Italy's Fiat has moved a step closer to taking a major stake in Chrysler. A U.S. court has ruled against a group of Chrysler's creditors who are trying to block that deal. From the European desk in London, here's Stephen Beard.
A bankruptcy judge has ruled that the Chrysler plan is fair. Chrysler and the U.S. government want a quick sale of most of the company's assets. They want to sell to a new firm, partly owned by Fiat. A group of Chrysler's secured creditors oppose the plan, calling it illegal. They claim their interests have been ignored, and that with a bit more time, a better deal could be struck. The judge rejected that claim and, in effect, said, let the bidding begin. Analyst Professor David Bailey says it looks like a shoo-in for Fiat.
Given the state of the economy and given the state of the car market generally, I find it highly unlikely that anybody would come forward and offer a better deal for Chrysler. And I think, basically, it's Fiat or bust for this company.
The judge has called for all bids to be in by May the 20th. There'll be a final hearing on the 27th. The deal could be sealed and delivered by the end of June. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
The Boston Globe and its largest union have reached a deal, reportedly, to cut costs and keep the newspaper in business. And that has other businesses breathing way easier in Beantown, namely advertisers. Some had been scrambling to figure out what to do in case the paper folded. Kurt Nickish reports from Boston.
For all the talk about declining ad revenue in the newspaper industry, it's still substantial. By sticking around, the Boston Globe will probably sell a few $100 million worth of ads this year. Lisa Adams works for a local ad buying agency. She says even with online advertising booming, it would be tough for her clients to drop the Globe. After all, she says, the paper lands on hundreds of thousands of doorsteps a day, and it reaches 500,000 households on the weekend.
On Sunday, those families are sitting down, they're holding that paper, and you've got somebody's full attention. For that reason, you typically are going to have better impact.
But not every advertiser is relieved by the Globe's new lease on life. Car dealer Ernie Bach Jr. says his ad buys with the paper have fallen off considerably since its heyday.
In the 80s and early 90s, the Globe was it. King. Nobody sold more cars than the Globe.
If anything, Bach says, the newspaper's brush with death has only ended up scaring advertisers. The Globe may be staying around, but it's probably going to have a smaller reach and a different look once management gets done with cutting costs. In Boston, I'm Kurt Nickish for Marketplace.
The state of California makes up about 13% of the national economy. But California's got a nearly $8 billion hole in its budget. In less than 2 weeks, Californians go to the polls to vote on several resolutions to plug that gap. So backers are hoping a new ad campaign will sway voters.
Without Props 1A and 1B, we have $16 billion in new cuts coming. Could lose another 24,000 firefighters and police.
The ads argue Californians will suffer if resolutions don't pass, and so could the rest of the country. Here's Marketplace's Jennifer Collins.
If all the states in the country were taking Economics 101, California would be in a parent-teacher conference.
Many states are holding California out as a model that they don't want to emulate.
Jean Ross runs the California Budget Project. She says unlike the federal government, states can't carry deficits.
Federal stimulus dollars are helping, but many states are cutting services to balance their budgets. John Shore tracks state spending at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. He says it would be a disaster for states to rely on cuts alone.
When states spend money, that pays salaries, it buys things, it puts money into the hands of people, usually in the local economy. So when states start to cut a lot, that actually makes a recession worse.
Shore says it's better to also raise taxes or find new sources of revenue. Ohio's dipping into its reserves. Hawaii may legalize gambling. It needs the money to make up a nearly $2 billion shortfall. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
General Motors faces a government deadline at the end of this month to complete its restructuring or face bankruptcy. Part of the hurdle is getting bondholders to swap billions in debt for a small equity stake. That's part of the plan laid out by President Obama and his auto task force. Now, GM CEO Fritz Henderson insists the government isn't in the car business. But commentator Will Wilkinson says, yeah, it's obvious who's running the show.
I don't want to run the auto companies and I don't want to run banks, President Obama said last week during a primetime press conference on the fate of Detroit. He may not want to, but the Obama administration is effectively running auto companies and banks. And the president does get a bit cranky when he tells the private sector to jump, and it doesn't jump. In a rare flash of anger, Obama lashed out at several Chrysler investors who refused to sign on to the administration's restructuring plan for the automaker. The plan would have required senior investors, who are usually first in line in bankruptcy proceedings, to take big losses, while more junior investors, including the UAW, were offered rather more generous terms. The failure of the plan has left Chrysler no other option than to file for bankruptcy. But why is the president involved at all in deciding who gets what in the breakup of an auto company? Much of the American economy is in disarray, but the bankruptcy system isn't. Indeed, the U.S. bankruptcy system works really well. So why meddle when an effective, long-standing legal system can take care of it? This is the price of bailout mania. When the government gets its finger in every pie, who gets what piece becomes a political decision. We may want to trust our leaders to be dispassionate stewards of the public interest, but politicians, and our overempowered executive is a politician, will use whatever discretion is at hand to reward their constituencies. Justice wears a blindfold for a reason. Injecting political partisans directly into economic decisions when well-functioning, time-tested rules are in place not only chills the confidence of investors, but moves us one step further from the already battered rule of law and one step closer to the dangerous rule of men.
Will Wilkinson is a research fellow with the Cato Institute. You can share your thoughts with us at our scratch pad with online host and blogger Scott Jagow inside our website, marketplace.org. Let's check Wall Street again right now. The Dow rocketing up toward 1% up at this hour, 80 points. NASDAQ up 0.5%, S&P up about 1.25%. The latest at our website, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us in Los Angeles. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.